Welcome to Wiener's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, every Tuesday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. What, you can't hear? We'll adjust. You got some knobs going on there? Or are we working now? Coach figured it out? Coach figured it out? With us right now to start the show, lots to do on Wiener's Barbecue today. Lots of UBC stuff to get through. Is we've got some men's basketball to kick things off here today, or to tip things off, however you want to put it. At 5 o'clock, we're going to have members of the swimming team who won an unprecedented 10th straight national championship for both the men and the women over the weekend. An incredible feat. One of the members is going to be Brian Johns, who won his third consecutive CIS Male Swimmer of the Year. We're going to get into some men's hockey, and then at 5:30, Dave Chernichan from News 11:30 will be with us. And that UBC Thunderbird men's hockey team won their first playoff series in 36 years.
Incredible.
There's something in that.
Yeah.
Yeah, talk into the microphone.
Come on, Coach.
Come on, Coach. Chris has it right here.
It took him a while just to figure out how to listen.
With us right now, Randy Knorr, assistant coach for the UBC Thunderbird men's basketball team, and Chris Dick, one of your star players. Can I say that?
Yeah, you can. It's safe to say that.
Has he earned that?
Yeah, you know, after his 1 year here, I think he's got that right to say that he's one of the star players on the team.
Now, I started us off here with Build Me Up Buttercup. Did you get that? Have you seen Something About Mary?
A long time ago.
You've seen it.
Yes.
Absolutely. That's the song they kind of play at the end.
Yeah.
So, Build Me Up Buttercup, and I'll do a cheesy sort of lead in here.
Okay.
You know, you guys have...
I don't doubt it.
You guys have the Final Four this weekend, and... Yeah. But this is a team... Chris, you haven't been a part of it, so you don't have to say anything. But this has been a team that has had a ton of success up to this point, the last 4 or 5 years... 3 of the last 4 years, you've made it to nationals, not counting this one, but you haven't had that sustained playoff success in one season. You've been knocked out of the first round of nationals 3 of the last 4 years. Now, Coach, you're not in nationals yet, but is this team good enough to do what those other teams have not been able to do?
I think so, and I think one of the main reasons is our defense is a lot better. We're able to stop people's runs, and when it comes to the playoffs, that's what it comes down to, is no one can score, and no one has 90 and 100 point games on a regular basis that we kind of average throughout the season, and it's going to come down to our ability to be able to stop people. And we've proven over the last few games that we're starting to get much better, and our team defense is getting better day in and day out.
So on the weekend, playing Victoria in what was really a huge series for you guys, if you lost that series, you wouldn't have been knocked out of the playoffs, it turned out, but you would have had to go this weekend to Brandon, play Brandon in really what was a round of 16 matchup for the national championships, because whoever wins that game goes home, and it would have been a real tough matchup. You swept Victoria on the weekend. You beat them pretty good, guys. 88-62 on the Saturday. 80-63 on the Friday. You scored Victoria 46-23 in the first half on Friday night. And here's my question, Coach. I mean, you guys have looked at the tapes. Was that the best half of basketball UBC played all year long, first half against Victoria on Friday?
Well, it was definitely one of our better defensive halves. I mean, I thought we had some games early on in the season, maybe against Calgary and Lethbridge, that we came out and shot the ball maybe a little bit better than we did in that game. But I think that a combination of our offense and our defense was probably our best.
Was that Chris's best half of the season?
I don't think so, just because the game that keeps screaming at me is the Trinity game where he had 27 in the first half. So, I mean, defensively, though, Chris had a very solid half, but maybe not his best offensive game.
Chris, pretty good, though. 19 points in the first half, 7-for-8 shooting, I believe, were the stats. I don't think you missed one from three-point land. I think you're something about 4-for-4. You had an alley-oop dunk from Casey Archibald. You hit a three-pointer near half court. You're smiling. It felt good, huh?
Yeah, it was one of those halves that just felt really good. Everything was just felt comfortable, you know. The shots I was taking, I felt were good ones, and at the time I was hitting them. So, it was just one of those halves that felt really good.
And then he got into foul trouble.
We couldn't get him out quick enough. He got that third foul, and we had the sub waiting to get him out, and he got an early foul right after that. So it was a good foul, though. I'll give him that. At least he didn't get dunked on.
Well, hold on here, because I got to ask you, Chris. When I was doing the radio broadcast, and I was sort of, I get to be the armchair athlete, of course, when I do the radio. Like, I could do anything out there. But, Chris, you picked up the foul, and it was Tyler Haas, I believe it was, on Victoria. Yep. And he elbowed you. We thought he traveled, actually. And next thing we know, it was a three-point play, which we completely missed. We couldn't understand why he only got one free throw. We couldn't believe the call. You were complaining to the referee about being elbowed. And then about, 30 seconds later, it was about? Maybe less than that. Tyler Haas has a one-on-one going against you, and you fouled him hard there when he went up for the dunk. Randy, was that a good – it was a good play by Chris? Because you guys had trouble with him out of the game in the second half.
I mean, Chris had such a good first half that a little disappointed not to see what it would have been like if we would have put two good ones together there. But I think it was a good foul. It was a playoff foul. I mean, we talked about all week how we don't want to give up easy hoops. And especially Tyler Haas, we'd rather see him go to the free throw line and have to earn it. And just so that they know that we're not going to give up easy hoops, where I'm not sure last year we would have fouled. Certain people might have got out of the way whatever the case might have been.
So, Chris, what you tell? My point is, though, is you weren't frustrated when you made that foul. That was just a normal play. Like, no, looking back on it now?
I think it wasn't a one-on-one. It was like a two-on-one, because I actually turned the ball over. And I was running back, and it was a two-on-one, and I was guarding the ball, and then he passed it to Haas. So it was just kind of as a player, you just kind of react, and he passed it to him, and he went up, and so you try to block the shot, and it wasn't anything that I wasn't trying to, like, hurt him or anything like that.
Because you looked pretty intense when you were doing the play. Or is that how he always looks out there?
I think he was just mad he turned the ball over.
Yeah, I was mad about that, and then, you know, I kind of thought it was a block, but whatever.
So, excellent. Chris is doing excellent for you guys this
year. He's really well.
So, from what you've seen, though, Randy, I mean, is Chris next year, I know you're staying right here, Chris, but is Chris next year sort of being looked upon the guy he's going to have to maybe take over a bit more of that scoring role next season? Because, you know, you guys always do have to look at rebuilding.
Yes, definitely. I mean, Chris is probably the biggest star that we'll have next year. I mean, obviously, with losing Casey, that's going to be, I mean, not that you can't replace Casey, but Chris is probably the closest thing that we have as a replacement. And I think a lot of the other guys are going to have to step up as well. I mean, Matt Racher and Bryson Cooler are definitely going to have to help Chris so that Chris doesn't have to come in and try to act like Casey. Chris is a little bit different player than Casey, but at the same time, very similar in the fact that they can both shoot the ball so well, and they both can really fill it up really quick.
You're in the heart of playoffs right now, Chris, but next season, is that a role you're ready to embrace?
Yeah, I think I'm ready for that, and I think it's been good playing with Casey and JB and Adam and those guys, because they teach you a lot, because they're the veteran guys in the team, so I think they helped me a lot to be ready for that next year.
Exciting?
Very excited.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So let's get into the playoffs right now. In essence, as I said, you go to the Final Four Canada West Championships this weekend in Brandon. You've got the game on Friday night.
You've got the big game on Friday night. Saturday, even if you lose it and you win on Friday, you still go to Nationals. But if you lose on Friday, you win on Saturday, you're still out. So yeah. Friday night is the game.
That's all it comes down to.
Yeah, you're playing Saskatchewan, a place where you went this season. You're going to play them in Brandon, but you went there this season, lost. You lost 79-75. So what happened in that game, Coach, that you guys do have to avoid?
We came out and had probably one of our worst halves. We turned the ball over I don't know how many times. It was close to 30. I don't want to say we got homered by the refs, but it didn't help that we didn't play the way that we played this past weekend. I didn't think we were very physical, and I think the biggest problem was we turned the ball over so many times that we just put ourselves at such a disadvantage.
Chris, that does seem to be something your team does do on occasion. You get into these stages where you just start constantly turning the ball over. What happens out there on the floor to you guys?
Well, I mean, when you get into a situation like that, I mean, you just, as a lot of veteran guys in the team, we just need to come together and just make sure that we're running proper plays and just taking care of the ball. And I think what's encouraging is in that Saskatchewan game is we played probably our worst, like, half to three-quarters of a game, and we still had a chance in the end to win that game, so that's always encouraging, too.
Is that, Coach, though, what you guys do? Is that what you're working on the most, though, is limiting turnovers going into these big playoff games?
The two areas that we've been really focusing on as a team since Christmas and probably from the beginning of the year is our team defense and not turning the ball over.
Right.
We're a very tough team to beat when we don't turn the ball over and we play solid team defense. Because we'll take our chances with anybody in the country with us and them shooting the ball. As long as we don't turn the ball over and give them uncontested layups. That's pretty hard to... It just takes so much life out of the team.
Right. And, Chris, I was down at your practice today, and they were working you, hey?
Oh, yeah, they had us working hard trying to keep us in the playoff mentality, which is good. So,
what was the practice being run? Was that a Saskatchewan matchup you were working on there, or what was being done there?
I think at the time when you came in, we were just working on kind of team defense, like 4-on-4 with three different teams and just making sure we're in the right positions when the ball's in certain areas and that we have lots of help side and stuff like that.
Is that it was all the teams? What were you doing there?
Yeah, I mean, we're still just trying to get better as a team. We did work today a little bit on some of Saskatchewan's stuff, but it has nothing to do with Saskatchewan, I don't think. It's totally up to us. If we come out and play with energy, we don't turn the ball over, and we play good team defense, doesn't matter what play they run or what little thing they try to do. As long as we do the things that we're supposed to do, we'll be in good shape.
And back to the weekend against UVic. Are you expecting more out of UVic on the weekend than they gave you guys when they go into Brandon?
I think so. I mean, I didn't think they overly shot the ball well. Just found out that Ellis might have been sick. I'm not sure if he's sick of his play on the weekend, yeah. And maybe that made him a little more sick. Or
what did he have, 3-4 points total on the weekend?
He's a very good basketball player, and he's going to bounce back from that, and he'll have a good weekend, especially because they're probably in a situation that they don't have a chance at a wild card, probably very similar to us. I would think out of all the teams in the Final Four, maybe only Brandon would have a shot at the wild card. We might be close, but they know that they have to come out and win on Friday night as well. So, and him being a fifth-year guy, he's going to come out and, yeah, I mean, he's always looking to put it up, but I'm sure he'll look to put it up even a little bit more.
So what is the matchup, though, on Friday, UBC and Saskatchewan?
The key for us is we need to stop two guys on their team and really focus on those two. I mean, Andrew Spegra is one of the best players in the country. He's one of the more difficult players to match up with. He's has the ability to shoot the ball. So I think we're going to start and we're going to really focus on him. And they have a second-year guard that really hurt us at their place, Chabot. Is that how you pronounce it? Chabot?
Something like that.
Yeah. All I know is his number.
There you go.
So it's those two we need to focus on.
And Chris, on a personal level, I asked you this on Friday. I think it was Saturday night after the win. These games are why you came to the school, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, this is, thinking back, I mean, the last time I played playoff basketball was in high school, so
really?
Which seems like a long time ago.
Manitoba, so you never made it?
Well, we made it first round one time, but got knocked out. So, I mean, this is the first, like, really meaningful game since like high school, so I'm really excited.
And is it a little comforting for you that you are going to the Great Plains? Like, you are the UBC player most familiar with this gym you're going to be playing at in Brandon?
Yeah, I mean, to me, I don't really think about it too much. I mean, it's not, you know, I'm going to have some people coming to watch. I mean, that's nice. But in terms of the gym, I mean, we just want to go in there and win the game.
How far is Brandon from Winnipeg?
Two and a half hours.
Oh, they can come easy.
Yeah.
Okay. Easy. And Jason Beering had a big game for you on Saturday, too.
Yeah, you know what? Jason's been great all year. I mean, he's really accepted his role this year. And he's been the guy that's won us a lot of games because people focus and put so much attention on Casey and Chris that JB has those moments where he comes in all of a sudden, boom, scores 9 points. All of a sudden now, instead of a tie game, we're up 9 points and we can kind of coast and kind of keep that little bit of a distance. And he was humongous on the Friday night, I thought. He just gave us a little spark when maybe our offense really wasn't clicking, especially when Chris got into foul trouble. I know JB really took it upon himself to really step it up, and I thought he played a really good game.
And Bryson Cool on Friday.
Probably Bryson's best game as a T-Bird, I thought. And even watching the tape, he has a lot of room to improve. But Bryson's upside is tremendous. And when he's hitting shots and when he just works hard, he's one of the better post players in the country.
So Saskatchewan in this weekend, is it sort of going to be similar to a Victoria matchup? I haven't seen Brandon or Saskatchewan, but were you going to need Bryson Cool and Cody Berg to really play well down low?
Definitely. I mean, when we went there last time, I wouldn't say either one of them had overly strong games. Chris had, a good second half, and Casey was Casey.
Yeah.
And no one else was overly great. And as a team, we didn't play that well. But, I mean, their size and athleticism down low, I mean, we're definitely going to need Bryson and Cody for the rest of the way. I mean, playoff basketball, you got to try to get as many touches inside and get as many easy hoops as possible. And especially with those two, and they're such big guys, that if they actually get low and hold their seals and we can get them the ball, I mean, that's just that's perfect for us because now people have to focus on them. Now it leaves so Casey and Chris can come off screens and hit some shots.
He's won it before, you know.
Yeah.
He knows what he's talking about.
Yeah. I'm trying to tell him.
what does it take, though, Randy Knorr? Is you won it twice with San FX.
Yeah.
What does it take? I mean, how you know, you've seen this team play in the regular season, you've seen it play in the Final Four. What happens, though, when you get to this stage and then the Nationals? How different are the games?
I find the big difference is the intensity is that much higher. What was a foul early on in the season isn't really a foul. No one's play is overly worked, so it's a lot of, because everybody's doing the same thing. Everybody's putting in the homework, or else you wouldn't be there. Everybody's doing the scouting and breaking all the tape down and all the individual stuff. So a lot of it's just coming down to players making plays at big times. And then the other big one is your ability to be able to stop people for long periods of times. Because no one goes into Halifax and wins three games because they shot the ball well.
Right.
I've never seen it happen. I mean, you see teams that'll have one game where they'll blow a team out, but there's a lot of games in Halifax that are in the 60s. So you need to get a little gritty. You need to have those hard fouls. You need to be able to, I mean, our advantage might be is we might be able to put some points on the board that some other teams might not be able to, but it's going to come down to our defense and our toughness.
Right, so I'm taking it you're going to need Cody Berg, Bryson Cool. I saw Sean Stewart hurt his foot today.
Yeah, I think he sprained his ankle. Yeah, I'm not sure how long he'll be out. But
right, but you're going to have those guys play huge for you in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, those guys are a big part of our team, and just their physical presence alone is something that we really need out in the court.
Awesome. UBC Thunderbird men's basketball team will be playing the University of Saskatchewan this Friday at 4 o'clock?
Yes.
I can't go, hey?
I know. Hey, you can come as one of the players. Maybe we could slide you in as warm up.
I can't go. It's kind of brutal. What do you think of you know that is, eh? Is it just a bad toy?
I'm thinking it's just a bad toy. I'm not really sure.
Is that Rocky's trainer?
You got it.
Oh, nice.
Mickey from Rocky
Mickey,
too.
Mickey.
Mickey nice. From Rocky too. So I tried to sort of spruce up the play. I got an Abbott Costello card here.
Yeah, you've really juiced up the play.
Not quite. Not quite. Chris, though, you got to be. Are you just buzzed right now? Are you just loving this or what?
Yeah, I'm just loving it. I mean, the last 2 weekends were fun, especially being at home, and just looking forward to going out to Brandon. And you know, it's nice. It's at one time you're like, man, one game and our whole season's on the line. But that brings some sort of excitement too. And I think we're gonna come out and play well.
It's a big one, eh?
You know, and that's what makes it fun.
Yeah,
you have to come out, and it's. I mean, at this time of year, everybody's good. You don't play a team that's not good, or if they weren't good, they wouldn't be there.
Right.
So it's just who brings their A game that day. Who can put three or four games? I mean, for us to win a national championship, we need five good games. There you go, buddy. No pressure.
UBC versus the University of Saskatchewan, Friday at 4 o'clock. It will be broadcasted on CITR by Sam Charles. And then, ideally, you're going to be playing Saturday at 6.
Yes,
For the Canada West Championship against either
Brandon or Vic. Hey, Brandon, one game at a time.
Well, hey, if you're not playing in that game...
Yeah, I'll be the bitter guy on the 4 o'clock game.
All right, everybody. We're going to be right back. We're going to talk a little UBC Thunderbird men's hockey. Won their first playoff series in 36 years. First playoff series in 36 years.
You got to watch out for them. I think they're going to take Alberta this weekend.
It'll be tough. Hey. It'll be tough. I've been doing their games for a long time. And my friend, I do it with Mike Wall, and I've done basketball and whatever. And when we started about 6-7 years ago, we didn't even, like, we did about 6-7 games in the season. We never even understood the playoff format of the Canada West because it was never even close to coming up. It never even mattered. We weren't sure exactly how many teams made it or how it worked out because this team was in dead last by so far for a couple years there.
Well, now you got to do your homework.
Yeah, it gets a little difficult. But, yeah, they won their first series in 36 years, and Mike Wall, who's been their play-by-play guy for 9 years, was with them on the weekend. So that was fun for Mike.
I think you're just getting back to this. You want to come on the brand?
Yeah, I can't. You know what? It was a little. I'm a little like, yeah. It was. I blame. I told you who I blamed off air.
Yeah.
I told you.
We won't say that on the air.
I told you who I blamed off air. All right, folks. Kevin Seibel from the UBC Thunderbird men's hockey team will be with us after the break. You're listening to 101.9 FM.
Everybody's building them boats. Some are building monuments. Others jotting down notes. Everybody's in despair. Every girl and boy. But when King the Eskimo gets here. Me. Everybody's out there feeding a pigeon's out on a limb. But when Quinn the Eskimo gets here, the pigeon's gonna run to him. Well, come on without, come on within. I can recite them all. Tell me where it hurts you, honey. I'll tell you who to call. Nobody can get out of sleep. You know there's something on everybody's toe. When the Eskimo gets here, everybody's gonna want a dough.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to Winner's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. I will not be in next week. I will not be in the following week.
And then the week after that, I'll get into it later in the show, is our big Vancouver Canuck ticket giveaway day where we find a bunch of people on the campus at UBC. We bring them in here. They have contests, various contests, and the winner wins two free tickets to a Vancouver Canuck game on Tuesday, April 3rd versus Los Angeles. We'll stay on hockey right now. We have with us on the line a defenseman for a UBC team where all the great performances by the UBC Thunderbird Athletic Department on the weekend, basketball hosting Final Four, they won their series versus UVic, the women basketball team, the men's volleyball team going to the Nationals, the swimming teams, 10 straight national championships for both the men and the women. This team did something a UBC team has not done in 36 years. They won a playoff series, 5-3, the final score on Sunday in Lethbridge, 6-5 winners on Friday, on Friday, 4-3 losers, a controversial game on Saturday, but they got it done in the biggest win for this program, I'm sorry, in 36 years. Defenseman Kevin Seibel with us on the line. So, Kevin, congratulations on finally winning a playoff series.
Thanks very much.
How was it, though, Kevin? You've been with this program. You obviously got recruited here. I mean, that had to have been something you guys knew about, 36 years, no series, and especially on Saturday night where you actually thought you tied it with 2 seconds to go. The goal was disallowed. It should have been a goal. I mean, there was last year in Calgary. You're 2 seconds away from winning. That series doesn't happen. Did you guys feel jinxed at some point going into Sunday's game?
No, we really tried not to think about that stuff. I mean, obviously there's talk about it when it's been that long without a team winning a playoff series, but this organization's really turned around. I mean, you've got good players coming in each year, and we've slowly got better every year, and I mean, we probably deserved a better fate last year, but this year it finally came through for us.
Kevin, though, 36 years, I mean, that is a long time. That is worth talking about, at least.
Oh, definitely. I mean, that goes on and on, but it's just UBC is a school that has so much more to offer than just its athletic programs, right, where lots of schools, that's what they thrive on.
But, you know, you're on the team next year, correct?
Yes.
So you got to come back next year, and you guys don't have to think about that anymore. Regardless, we'll get into this weekend, but regardless of what happens this weekend, next year, I mean, that's over. I mean, Milan Dragicevic said it to us after the game. This was a win not only for you guys, but for all the alumni and everybody.
Oh, definitely. I mean, we have great alumni. They've supported us through thick and thin. I mean, it's just good to give back to them, guys that have stuck with the program over the several years that they have, and they've just given back every year, and it's just nice to give them something to cheer about finally.
Well, 5-3 winners on Sunday, and I think you guys were up 2-0, or was it 3-0 after the first period? What was the score? Or was it 3-1? What was the score after? It was 2-0, I think, after the first period.
2-0.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, and Coach called that the best period you guys played all year.
Yeah. I mean, we were just really sound. I mean, everyone stuck to our systems, and it was just there was very little mistakes on our part, so we really gave Lethbridge nothing to capitalize on.
And, you know, the Saturday night, though, UBC, you guys were down 4-3, and you got a goal late in the game on Saturday. 2 seconds to go, Ashley Todd scored it, and the ref called it a goal, and the linesman standing way out, you know, by the blue line, and there's apparently about 7 bodies in the net there fighting for that puck, waved it off. I mean, what went on there? I take it you were on the ice for that, weren't you?
Yeah, I had a front row seat. I was right by Ashley when he scored that one. I mean, it's definitely heartbreaking because you look over and you don't see anyone on their team arguing the calls. Their coach isn't yelling, screaming. Their goalie's not motioning. They just couldn't believe that we scored with that little time left. And then all of a sudden you turn around and it's been called off. I mean, it's definitely a heartbreaker.
How mad was Coach after that call?
He was pretty furious. I don't know if he was as mad as Ashley Todd, but he was right up there with him.
Yeah, I mean, we had a great interview with him. That's all I'll tell you right after that happened. So
Sure he had some choice words.
Oh, yeah. Let's just say we're happy the right hands didn't get a hold of that interview. So. Let's just say we're happy about that one. Tell us about Ashley Todd there. He had that goal and the hat trick on Friday night. You know, I've watched your team a lot this year, and really that line, you have to have them going, and they got it done this weekend. Ashley Todd, John Kress, and Lance Morrison, who at the beginning of the year were really struggling as a unit, but they really came on the last half of the year for you guys.
Yeah, they did. They really came out of their shell, and I mean, any key to success is having secondary scoring, and I mean, that's definitely their job, and I was just talking with Jeff Lynch the other day about that, is our team kind of goes as that line goes, because they're real energy line for us. And I mean, Ashley Todd's always been a good player, and it's just nice to see him contribute like that.
And you played, did I read that right? Did Coach tell me right here, is you played, you and Brad Zanin on defense played 36 minutes on Sunday?
Yeah, it definitely felt like 36. It might even felt like 40 on Sunday.
So what was that like for you?
No, it was good. I mean, every hockey player wants to play that many minutes if possible. And, I mean, it's just good to know that we were on the ice and just helping the team in every possible chance we had.
So going into Alberta this weekend, you know, I think your goal, though, this season, correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, obviously to win a national championship, but the step you had to make, you wanted to host the playoff series. You didn't do that, but you did win the playoff series. Going into, so, you know, if you just have a good weekend this weekend, you know, the series can be looked upon as somewhat of a success. But going to Alberta this weekend, you're now in a situation where if you do win this series, regardless of what happens when you play probably Saskatchewan the following weekend, you are going to the national championship. So a ton on the line for you guys this weekend.
Oh, definitely. And I mean, that's all we're thinking. You know, we're not satisfied with just this first playoff win, because we've kind of underachieved all year. Like, we thought we could have got second place. And I don't know, I think Alberta's taking us lightly, and hopefully we can surprise them when we go in there on Friday.
Well, you beat them in Whistler. You knocked off a major UBC Thunderbird skid in Whistler, but you still haven't beat them in Alberta. So that's another, you know, skid you guys have to break. But this is definitely an Alberta team. I mean, Lethbridge went in there the second last weekend of the regular season and swept them there, and you can obviously beat Lethbridge. So that has to give you confidence.
Oh, definitely it does. I mean, getting that win against them gives us confidence. Seeing other teams beat them, they're not quite the team that they've used to be, but, I mean, they're still a very good team. But we believe we're also an equal team to them.
So it could be good timing for the UBC program that you guys are having a peak year and Alberta seems to be slipping. This is maybe the year to get Alberta in the playoffs is what I'm saying.
Oh, definitely. I mean, any year is great when you can get Alberta in the playoffs. But, I mean, this year we might as well just keep with the theme of beating all those streaks that we're taking care of right now.
Awesome. Kevin Seibel from the UBC Thunderbird men's hockey team. A remarkable achievement for you guys. No longer is this program have to face that number. Hasn't won a series in 1971. Regardless, Kevin, of what happens this weekend, you guys are on a one-year winning streak.
Thanks very much.
Best of luck in Alberta, Kevin. And, yeah, we were very happy that on Sunday we got to broadcast that game on CITR. We were very happy about that.
Thanks.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, Kevin. I appreciate it.
All right. Talk to you later.
36 years it was in between UBC Thunderbird men's hockey playoff series victories, and it did happen. It finally happened in Lethbridge on the weekend. Our Michael Wall was there, and hey, pretty cool, pretty cool. As of right now, I'm off next week. It'll be an hour show as of now. I'm going to try to keep Renee's going to fill in for me. He's on before me. He's going to take it to 5 o'clock, and I'm going to try to get Mike to flex your head to come in early, maybe a half hour too. And I might play. I'd like to maybe set it up where I can play the half hour of that third period. I know it'll be very dated by then, but it's a remarkable achievement, their first playoff series win in 36 years. Okay, once again, folks, I'll say this right now. I am off next week. I'm away. And then the following week, I'm just getting back, but we are going to be doing high school basketball that day. We're going to be doing a lot of high school basketball, the men's provincial tournament. We're going to be doing a game on the Tuesday, a game on the Wednesday, two games on the Thursday, both semis on the Friday, and then the final on the Saturday. Then CITR Sports is done for the year. And then that March 20th, we're going to be doing some, ideally, some men's basketball national championship recap. But it's really the end of my UBC broadcasting this year, and then this show sort of takes off into the weird domain. And that day, March 20th, mark your calendars down, especially if you're around campus that day, is we are going to be doing our second annual Vancouver Canuck ticket giveaway show. Our second annual Vancouver Canuck ticket giveaway show. Me and my buddy Derek Andrew, we're going to be out on UBC campus with our signs, free Canuck tickets. You show up here at 4:30. Various contests will take place. And who's ever standing at the end will get two tickets to the Vancouver Canucks versus the Los Angeles Kings, Tuesday, April 3rd, tickets valued at $100, which I believe it's either the last or the second last home game for the Canucks this regular season. So that's what we're going to be doing Tuesday, March 20th. All right, we're going to take a break right now. When we're back, we're going to hop into the swimming pool. Brian Johns and members of the 10-time in a row national champion UBC Thunderbird swimming teams of the both. I'm assuming we've got men and women out there. I don't know. Brian never told me. He just walked by and said, I'm here. Maybe it's just him. I don't know. But we'll get into that after the break. You are listening to Wiener's Barbecue on 101.9 FM. 5:30, Dave Chernichan from News 1130 will be with us to get into all the NHL trade talk that took place today. I'm wearing my Todd Bertuzzi shirt, my Canuck Todd Bertuzzi shirt, and I've actually got tickets March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, and Todd be healthy. Well, ask Dave what's going on with Todd's health for that game, but Todd be healthy because I'm going to the bar at about 11. I've got a baseball pool draft at about 8, 7:45 in the morning, my Yahoo one. So that's at 7. Then I'm going to the bar at like 11, and then I'm going to go to the game at 7. So I've got my outfit ready. So St. Patrick's Day, twos, make it better, show up. Okay, are you a swimmer? Oh, perfect. The swimmers are here. We're going to take a break. You're listening to 101.9 FM.
With that cat there?
Must be full of reefers.
Full of reefers?
Yeah, man.
Mean that cat's high?
Sailing. Lightly.
Get away from here.
Man, is that the reefer man?
That's the reefer man.
I believe he's losing his mind.
I think he's lost his mind.
Reefer man.
Reefer man,
have you ever met that funny reefer man?
Reefer man,
if he says he swam to China and he sells you South Carolina, then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Reefer man,
have you ever met funny reefer man?
Reefer man,
have you ever met funny reefer man?
Reefer man,
if he says he walks the ocean and any time he takes a notion, then you know you're talking to reefer man.
Reefer man.
Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Reefer man.
Have you ever met fun reefer man?
Reefer man.
Have you ever met a funny reefer man?
Reefer man.
If he takes a sudden mania, wants to give you Pennsylvania, then you know you're talking to the reefer man. Cause he won't sell the Atlantic, then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Yeah. Oh, we're on the air right now.
Oh, we're ready to go
we're
now.
We're on the air now. Okay, everybody, welcome back to Wiener's Barbecue here on 101. That was Cap Calloway.
That was Cap Calloway.
I believe it was. I think it was. Anyways, folks, you're listening to Wiener's Barbecue on 101.9. Now, you were nervous coming in.
Mm-hmm.
You got to talk closer to the microphone.
Then
you're all good. Then you're all good here. Just watch. Brian's a pro.
Yeah, he is.
Brian's a pro over there. You've done the old CBC Olympics. You've done all that.
So. Oh, yeah, I'm
you can
well-versed.
You can handle it. Brian Johns from the UBC Thunderbird men's swimming team and Caitlin Meredith from the UBC Thunderbird women's swimming team. So we'll get into you guys in a second, but the team first. Because I had swimmers in. I remember it was a couple years ago. I had some swimmers in, and they were 2 years ago talking about the 10 in a row.
Yeah.
I remember that coming up 2 years ago, and on the weekend, you guys did it. both the men and the women 10 national championships in a row. Both hands.
Yeah.
Both hands. You're on the toes now.
Yeah, exactly.
You're on the toes. So, Brian, we'll start with you from the men's side. I mean, I don't know, is it a total team, men and women together, or is it, how does it work?
Well, I mean, the atmosphere at the pool, we do everything together, right. So the environment itself is both men and women, but when it comes down to the actual meet, men and women are separate,
right.
And the points score separately, and everything's apart. But the energy that we have on the entire team definitely carries over, and we're always supportive of each other, of doing everything. So,
because you guys didn't win the Canada West Championship this year. You lost to Calgary, but my understanding of that was the reason you lost it was because they simply had a lot more swimmers than you. That was my understanding.
Essentially. At Canada West, there's only 6 or 7 schools that compete, and so when you're outnumbered like we were this time around, the numbers can really take more of an effect on you no matter how well you swim. And so when we got to CIs and the depth is a little bit deeper and you got the Ontario and Quebec schools in there taking placings, the high performances really stand out a little bit more, and we were able to take it to them this time around.
Did you rib it to them though, Kaylin, that you guys won the conference championship and they didn't? a little laughing at them there?
No, we always support each other.
to your faces, at least.
Yeah, exactly.
To your faces. But Brian, from the men's side, 10 straight for you guys. What does that mean?
Well, it's pretty amazing. It's unprecedented, I think, in any sport, yeah. On men's or women's, so it's pretty outstanding that we are both able to do it at the same time. And for the guys, it's I guess it's one more step in on the road to excellence for both of us. And the biggest thing for us is continuing this, I guess, environment of excellence, and the way that the coaches have set up the program, it could go on for a few more years.
Kaylin, are you a senior or what year?
Yeah, I'm graduating this year.
Okay, so you won 5 national championships, take it?
You're 5 years, 5 titles.
Five years, five titles. Right. And there's lots of them like you.
Yeah,
there's
true.
Lots of them like you. But how does that feel, though? 5 national championships in 5 years for you?
Oh, it feels great. When you come in your first year and you're a rookie, that's what everyone tells you. That's your goal. You want to get in there and you want to win every single year. So it's great to accomplish that.
I mean, that's crazy, though. That's what the goal is, 5 national championships in 5 years. And How many people have actually done that? Like, is there approximately, is there like 70 people or?
Oh, I don't think it's
people?
That many bees. If it, like very few people actually make it all the way to their fifth years,
right.
But off the top of my head, I'd have to say about 25, 30 that have gone through all 5 years and getting 5 titles in all of them.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable. And for the women, though, what did it mean? Like, the ladies, was it? You blew everybody out again. You guys blew them out, too, didn't you?
Yeah, we were a little bit closer than the guys, but... Yeah. Yeah, we beat them by 99 points, so it was good.
So good. Now, and Brian, you're the talk of the town here. You're the talk of the town here. I saw your career, 34 CIS medals, 33 of them gold, and you were male swimmer of the year for the third time.
Yeah. Pretty much. I mean, it's a pretty good way to end a CIS career, I guess. I mean, the main thing for me was always the team aspect of the sport. It's pretty much grilled into us that CI is way more about the team aspect, and it's a bit of a different environment for swimming, because swimming is an individual sport, and then you add this team title concept to it, a lot of people can't handle it very well and look out for themselves a little bit more. But here at UBC, we've always embraced that and challenged ourselves within our own team. And so that's all pretty much I think about whenever I have those talk about those medals. It's all more points for the team in the end. So
why 33 and 34, Brian?
I've been a little bit teased about that all day today, it seems like. But the very first race I had was 200 freestyle in Guelph, and I lost to Rick Say, who would end up breaking the national record in that race. And since then, I won 33 in a row, and I guess I'll never live down that one that I didn't get to, so...
So that was it was your first race?
Yeah, first race.
And you got second place?
Yeah.
And you won everyone since then?
Yeah.
So the perfect game was off the books right away.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I mean, the first pitch was a home run out of the park, and then it was a pretty good game after that.
It was a little bleeding single. I didn't feel hit. And Caitlin, in this one, was it you had 5 gold medals overall, you told me?
This year I had 2 gold, 2 silver,
okay,
2 bronze.
2 gold, 2 silver, and it was in the 50-meter backstroke, 100-meter breaststroke, 200 medley. What were your other ones? And then
200 some... back, and then the 3 relays.
Wow. What's your favorite one out of those?
200 back.
Yeah. Backstroke.
Yeah.
I can't even, like, twirl my arm all the way. What's your event, Brian?
Individual medley.
Individual medley. Everything.
So, yeah.
I've asked you this before, yeah.
Yeah. They pretty much just insert me in the blank areas, and yeah. I just do whatever I'm told, essentially.
Other people, Brian, you want to mention that did great for you guys on the weekend?
Oh, there's so many. On the guy's side, there's Daryl Rudolph, who had 6 golds and a silver. Callum Ng, who... I don't know the number off the top of my head, but also had several golds. Matt Huang had dominated the breaststroke events along with Scott Dickens, and all of these guys made the University Games team this time around, along with myself, Caitlin, and Michelle Landry on the women's side. So all in all, it was such a great performance by everybody. Everybody stepped up, and it was awesome to see that that level of performance, especially for our 10th title.
And the women, unbelievable too.
Oh yeah, everyone really contributed. It was great.
Anybody you want to mention? Or
Michelle Landry, our captain. Yeah. She started us off on the right foot on the first night, winning the 400 IM. She just killed the competition, which was steep competition. She won the best time, and she just set the pace for the meet. It was great.
So Brian, you know, you've been to 2 Olympics now.
Yeah.
2 Olympics. Is there something, though, special about these team CIS events that...
Oh, it's a totally different environment. Like I was saying before, it's the team aspect of it. And when you're on the national team, you feel the sense that it's a little bit more you against the world.
Right.
And trying to see what you're trying... the best that you can do against everybody. And at the CIS level, it's more... what can you do for your team and making sure your team ends out on top at the end. And the CIS experience for me overall, I think, is going to make me a better swimmer at the international stage, and definitely has made me a better teammate along the way, and definitely cherish all the memories that I'm going to have from here.
I just realized you're wearing a Clubber Lang t-shirt.
Yeah, that's right.
You're wearing it, and I have Mickey from Rocky II right here. Do you know Clubber killed Mickey?
Yes.
In Rocky, he pushed him, and that led to Mickey's death.
Yes,
and
I know.
He's actually facing Mickey directly, or getting ready to knock him out. Where'd you find that shirt?
I don't even know. I think I got it at some pawn shop for about $7.
Well,
my prediction for this interview is pain, so.
Well, money well spent, eh?
Exactly.
Money well spent. And Caitlin, are you going to go on swimming, or what do you plan to do?
Oh, yeah, I'm going to swim for one more year. It's Olympic year next year, so
okay.
I'll just put all my eggs in and just do best I can.
Have you gone to the Olympics yet? Or?
No.
Okay.
I'm always just trying.
How close are you to making it?
Well, top 2 are allowed to go, and my best placing at a trials situation has been 3rd, so
ooh.
I'm close.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh man! Right, so what's your? So it's 2008.
Yeah.
You go to Beijing. They cheat there, you know.
What?
Or they did. They did cheat. They did cheat, didn't
yeah,
they?
Yeah. Well.
They did. They 100%
yes,
did.
Yes.
They cheated. Watch it.
They're all under the radar right now. So
wasn't it honestly though? Wasn't it the Chinese? The women. It was the women.
Yes.
They came
the
out
women.
One year and they had arms out to this, and
yeah,
they
true.
Broke all the world records. And what happened to that? What happened to those girls after that?
I don't know. One of the best stories I've ever heard about that though was Marianne Limpert used to swim on our team, and she went to the big meet where. They were supposedly cheating was the 94 World Championships. And
right.
So she's there. She's changing in the locker room. And she hears a couple of guys talking to each other. And she's like, oh, my goodness, I got to cover myself up. And then she turns her corner and realizes it's 2 Chinese women talking to each other. So it was a little iffy at points there. So I think it's a little bit cleaner, but we'll see.
So, Caitlin, how are you matching up? Who are the 2 swimmers who are just ahead of you?
Erin Gamble, she's the big rival from the Dinos.
Really?
Yeah, and Kelly Stefanishin, our own teammate here.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So, and when does this all happen?
That'll be next summer, I guess.
So you just train?
Oh, yeah. Train all year round.
How's it work for you, Brian?
Well, it's pretty much the same. Like, we have university games this summer.
Yeah.
And we'll use that as a stepping stone towards the Olympic year next year. And we have our Olympic trials at the end of April next year, I think, which is a little bit earlier for us than usual. And then it's straight from there to Beijing and getting ready for that.
And on a personal level, Brian, is this maybe thinking when, if in, you do get to the Olympics, of course, this will be your time? Like, are you a better swimmer now than you were 3 years ago?
Yeah, I think so. 3 years ago, I thought that would be my time, essentially. And unfortunately, I had some injury issues that held me back a little bit, but came back and rehabbed the shoulder. And I think the experience that I had from that injury is going to make me a better swimmer in the long run. And all the experiences I had leading into this year will... I'll be better off for it, and I think in the end I'll be able to perform at a pretty high level come Beijing.
Because swimming, the Winter Olympics, of course, come into Vancouver, and it seems they're giving all this funding to the winter athletes. Are they doing the same for the summer athletes?
Yeah, you're starting to see a little bit of a spillover into the summer sports. And one example is they have Legacies now for the winter side, which is funding winter athletes. They just came out with a summer Olympic athlete equivalent to that, where summer people who are in contention to go to the Olympics can apply for it and get subsidies from that. So yeah, you're starting to see a little bit of the spill and getting a lot more publicity this time around. So it'll be, I think it'll be a lot of fun leading up.
Last time I interviewed you in the studio about 5-6 years ago, and you had nothing but really bad things to say about the way they were treating you guys. It wasn't right, it sounded like, but
well,
it's getting better.
Yeah, I mean, it's there's always areas to improve, of course.
Right.
But, yeah, 5 or 6 years ago, it was a bit... we would get our carding checks, and then that's it. And it's not exactly easy trying to live off of about $10,000 in Vancouver. And it's while going to school, and then most people are working a job. But now they're starting to turn that around. Carding has increased. Private sponsorships are a little bit more available, and... it's starting to turn around, and 2010 is a big reason for that.
And Caitlin, isn't it unbelievable being in a UBC program where you guys go to the Olympic Games? I mean, you said it, one of the people you're competing with for your spot is on your team. So, I mean, is it unbelievable to be in a program like that?
Oh, yeah, it's a great environment. We're always pushing each other and workout and supporting each other, and yeah, it's awesome.
Because, so what you're telling me is you'll come second on your team, and you're third in the country in that event to make it to the Olympics. That's in essence what you're telling me.
Well, there's a handful of other girls, too, who, you know, they're always trying to get in there as well. But so yeah, basically.
But what I'm saying is if you succeed at UBC, you're succeeding close to the, or if at the national level.
Yes, yeah.
That's special.
Yeah, definitely. That's the level of performance that we have at our university right now. And just if you're the best in our club, you're likely the best in the country as well. And like Caitlin is a great example of that, being one of the best in our on our team, is just like right up there, maybe a little bit closer than she thinks to the top of the country. But I mean that, and we always driving each other to keep on pushing forward and forward to the greater performances. And I think by the time the Olympics come around, we're going to have a lot of people on that team.
How many projected and possible Olympians you got?
Oh, I don't know. Well, we have a good estimate is we have 9 people going to FISU's this year. And
Which is what?
University Games.
Okay.
And
what's it called?
FISU's. Don't even ask me what the acronym means.
That's a terrible name.
I know. It's horrible.
It sounds stupid when you say it. It just doesn't work.
Yeah. Some people call it the World Universiad. That sounds a little bit more splashy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I guess.
Yeah. But for the Olympics next year, I think we can get... the most we've ever had, I think, is 12 from UBC.
Wow.
But back then, it was a little bit easier to make the relays. This time around, it's a little bit more challenging. But I still think we can get about 6 to 8 people on this team. And that'd be a tremendous accomplishment.
So why is it harder to get there now?
Well, the time standards are harder. Before, it was we totally based it off of what FINA gives us, which is the international governing body for swimming.
Oh.
Now... I'm not sure if it's going to be the same thing this time around, but at Athens, we actually had a time standard harder than what FINA gave us. And so that kind of minimized the number of people that went. And it's a little bit tougher to make the relays. We're not sending six people to the relays anymore. We're just sending four. And so it makes it a little bit more challenging to make it. But I still think that we'll have a lot of people on that team.
How's the swimming environment in China? Because you said Australia was unbelievable.
Oh, yeah. Well, Australia's ridiculous since swimming is pretty much the number one sport. But China, the way it is, I haven't had too much experience being there. I've swam in Hong Kong once. And it's a little bit different from what I understand, but from what I hear, it's going to be a pretty hectic environment, and it'll be definitely something that'll be unique to what we are used to.
What does that mean?
Well, I don't think we're usually used to, like, people smoking in the pools and
really?
Stuff like that. That's what we're that's what we're told to be prepare for.
Drugs.
Yes.
I'm sorry. is drugs still a major problem in swimming right now?
Well, I mean, I think it's a major problem in most sports, yep. And it's a little bit under the rug, but at the same time, there's not much you can do about it. It's just have to deal with it just like anything else. And yeah, just you got to hope that if they're taking drugs, they'll get caught. If right. they don't, then you don't have much control over that. You just got to do what you do in the pool.
And you're still told don't drink out of water bottles with the cap's been opened and all that stuff?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like, I mean, you have all the urban myths almost where right. it's like don't leave your water bottle. If you leave your water bottle, forget about it, and don't borrow somebody else's food or stuff like that. And it's all those strange things.
And they're talking about UBC going NCAA Division I, just floated out there. If it's, you know, it could happen in 4 years, it could happen in 10 years, who knows, right? But it might happen eventually. Is swimming, though, the sport, I mean, you guys obviously have swum against these people. Is swimming a sport you could just jump in right away against American schools and be very competitive, if not success, you know, winning? I mean, how would you guys compete against them? Because you see these guys at the international level, so.
Yeah, we've also dueled against them on occasion. When we go down, we've dueled against, like, Arizona State, Arizona. Arizona was runner-up for the NCAA championships last year on the men's side. And so we've definitely challenged ourselves against the American schools and held our own. The biggest challenge for us, but I think it would be quickly rectified if we went NCAA, is the numbers. We're limited to 18 people at the CIS level, whereas in NCAA they're only limited to the number of scholarships they give out, but they can have a team of 36 if they qualify. Right. And that's the biggest challenge that we would have to overcome. But in terms of the top end talent, like I know that my performances would be about medalist, if not winning at NCAAs. I know our relays would be do extremely well at NCAAs. And I think if we were to move to that right now in Div 1, we would make a pretty quick impact. We'd probably be top 10, top 15 on both the guys and girls sides.
Right. If you had if you could add more people, maybe even higher.
Yeah, exactly. A little bit more depth, and we'd be even closer.
And the women, Caitlin, the women were the same against these top schools, or?
Yeah, pretty similar. I think the men's team, like, have a lot of gold medalists. Like, if you look at just how we did at CIs,
right.
The men won, what was it, 10 out of 13 events or something ridiculous?
Yeah, I think we ended up with 16 out of 19, including the relays. So
yeah, so the women right now, we're more focused on depth. Like, we'll have four girls in the final, so I don't know if that would translate quite as well as the men into the American system, but it would still be pretty good.
My other question is, who, if you have the grades to get in here, who doesn't come to UBC who wants to be a swimmer? Well, you know, you guys both train for the national level. I mean, why wouldn't you come here if this is the, I mean, it seems when you follow academic programs here, schools with sports programs, it seems it's a momentum thing.
Mm-hmm.
Were they able to get kids in? I mean, who wouldn't? You guys must be able to pick who you want right now.
Well, you'd think that, but I mean, we're of course competing with the American schools to get kids to come over here because, I mean, of course we can't give scholarships same way, and so lose a lot of kids to the States who want the free ride. And but the kids who do come here, of course, have a lot of success, and so we end up typically we get a lot of the kids from BC and Alberta to either come to UBC or Calgary. Calgary is still a great program. And but the kids out east in Ontario especially tend to look as NCAA a little bit more high regard than staying in Canada. So it's always a bit of a challenge to try and keep these kids in Canada. I think in the long run, if we were able to keep these kids here, our national team would be better. But that's just the way it goes, I guess.
Why would that help? Just get them all in the same country at the same time, same place at the same time?
Well, yeah, I mean, to have the sort of the within-nation competition, I mean, right now it's essentially CIs is a glorified dual meet between us and Calgary right now, and it's a big shame because I remember when I first came to UBC, especially on the girls' side, there was UBC, Laval, Calgary, Toronto, and a bunch of other schools that were winning medals and winning events, and now you look at the top end talent, and it's essentially just UBC and Calgary, and as it trickles down, all the depth of the nation is just between these two clubs. And when they go to the people who are going to the States are essentially getting, for lack of a better term, getting sucked into a black hole. They go in there for one free year and kind of get lost into the system, and you never hear or see from them again. And if they stayed in Canada, maybe have a little bit more vital role in the Canadian universities, they would perform a little bit better in the long run. Not to say that people don't have success going down to the NCAA, but I think in the long run, it would probably help if more people were able to stay in Canada and we were able to entice them with scholarships like they do in the States.
Caitlin, are you from Vancouver area?
I'm from Kamloops.
Kamloops, so close enough.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Well, were you ever offered, or do you ever think of going down south?
I was offered, but I turned them down pretty fast.
Who offered to you?
I don't even remember. It was 5 years ago. I didn't consider it really at all. I'm pretty proud to be Canadian and contribute to the Canadian system and the Canadian community and as a whole. So.
Because, Brian, you must have had offers.
Yeah, I had a few offers when I was graduating from high school. And most notably in my mind, I think, was Michigan and Auburn. Michigan is much more known for their international competition than they are for NCAAs. They've had world records come out of there almost every year, it seems like. And then Auburn is the reigning national champion.
Because, Michigan in sports is one of the premier sports schools in everything, pretty much.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Michigan is a lot like UBC in the sense that they have such high academics as well as a lot of success at sports schools or in sports. And so that was one of the main things that attracted me to there. But just things, I felt that it was a little bit more important for me to stay in Canada. And UBC being home for me has definitely made it a little bit an easier choice for me.
So you got the big time schools came a knocking, hey?
A few of them did, yeah.
Yeah, they came a knocking, hey? Did you write the SATs? Did you go through that whole thing?
I most certainly did, yeah.
Oh, so you were considering it, hey?
Yeah, I considered it for a little while, and then my first choice was to decide whether or not I was going to stay in Canada or go to the States. And I quickly decided that I was going to stay in Canada, and then once I got to that point, the choices for after that is pretty much UBC or Calgary. And so I'm definitely glad that I stayed at home and had the success I've had here.
Is that hard, the SAT?
Oh, not really.
I don't know. Did you write it, Caitlin?
No, I didn't even
consider. Never considered it, hey?
No. I mean, you take the SATs, it's the American schools can do whatever they want with them, essentially. You score like 890, and you can get into any American university. I think you get 700 for writing your name on the test. So, I mean, it's
I think you do, actually. Something like that.
Yeah.
Actually,
yeah. It's not that big of a deal.
What do you think of my decorations today?
I love the satchel page.
Starting lineup.
Yes, exactly.
I'm very impressed you know who that is.
I know. I love it. It's awesome. The Negro League statuette there, it's beautiful.
Absolutely.
I love the swimming trunks.
Yeah. I brought that for you guys.
Yeah.
I have the swimming. Is this a nice pair of swimming trunks?
I wouldn't call it the most high performance swimming trunks, but I mean, you'd look good on the beach in those ones.
I'm not wearing high performance. I see what those are. I'm not going there. And my Rocky 2 Mickey doll, he came with a little hat. I don't know what the stool's for.
Yeah.
It's quite a stupid, you know, it doesn't look like
I think you need a Rocky for Mickey to have Rocky sit on that stool.
Well, I told you, I told you this before we went on. I bought my cousin Louis Firippo.
Yeah.
Who was for Hanukkah, I bought him the referee from Rocky 2. That's what I got him. So I got him, and then my Abbott and Costello baseball card.
Yes, beautiful.
Which I'm very proud of. proud. Awesome, guys. Well, thank you very much for coming in.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank Brian. You.
Thank you, Caitlin. Thanks thank you guys very much. And yeah, congratulations. A 10th straight national championship for the UBC Thunderbird women and UBC Thunderbird men's team. That is ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah. I'd say it's pretty ridiculous.
That is awesome. Ridiculous because, I mean, how did it start, though, is my question.
Oh, I think you really have to look at the coaching staff for that one.
Yeah.
Tom Johnson was the coach of UBC and really created the atmosphere of excellence here. And then Derek Shuf, our current head coach, was the assistant once these titles started and has now taken over the reins and has been able to continue to produce that environment.
Was it ever close in either of your career?
Oh, yeah. My first and second year, we were actually losing. Well, second. Yeah. After the second day, going into the final day, and oh, it's nerve-wracking. Yeah.
To be honest, I thought this year was going to be one of the most challenging years for the men's
yeah.
side.
Women, too.
Yeah, and with the guys, we only had 12 guys to their 18, and so we thought the numbers game might get us, and it was a little bit close after the first day, and then we kind of performed out of our minds on the second day, and where we thought we would be close, we kind of gained a bigger lead, and then it was essentially, I think Calgary kind of threw in the hats on the last day, and we were able to just kind of manhandle them on the way home.
Was it ever close, though, in your career here?
I think the closest for me was my second year when we actually hosted it here at UBC. Yeah. And it was within 10 points after the second day going into the final day. And it was definitely really close then. But I think every time, we're always confident that we're coming out with these titles. And I think that that belief in our own system and in our program really helps us out along the way.
5-5, hey?
Yeah.
And people have 10, and it's 10-10 overall. That is unbelievable. So, Brian, best of luck. So, the Olympics, you are trying out for what?
My events this time around will be 200 IM and the 200 freestyle, hopefully to get on the relay for the 200 free. And our guys at World Championships a couple of years ago ended up silver when we had it in Montreal. Unfortunately, I was injured at that time, so I missed out on that one. But that's kind of where we're at on that relay. So really? We have a pretty good medal chance there.
Is Thorpe still around? Or did he retire? Or
he retired, actually.
Yeah.
He, I think he kind of lost the love of the sport a little bit, and he had to deal with a lot of health issues last year and finally decided to hang up the trunks.
And who are the American? There was a couple of well, Phelps.
Yeah, there's Phelps. And then Ryan Lochte as well, who are both in my events in the 200 IM. And
you raced against Phelps?
Yes.
Have you raced against him before? He's the big celebrity down
oh,
there.
Oh, yeah, I've raced yeah. against Phelps a few times, a lot of times.
Is he a good guy?
He's all right. I mean, he's...
Because he's the superstar. Right?
Yeah,
he's the flash guy out there.
He's kind of the face of swimming right now, yeah. and... But I mean, he's a good guy. He handles himself with a lot of class on the pool deck. But sometimes I get the feeling like the elevator doesn't get to the top floor sometimes.
And it's my understanding your best event isn't an Olympic event. Is that my understanding? You set a world record once.
Oh, yeah. That was in the 400 IM. That was short course.
Yeah.
And the Olympics are long course in a 50-meter pool.
Is that your best event? Or?
Well, I've kind of strayed away from the short course swimming a little bit in preparation for the Olympics. Yeah. And so a little bit more focus on the long course training. But, yeah, I mean, I've always been a little bit better short course than long course.
And my understanding is in the Australian Olympics, you guys had a rough go. That's what they're talking about on the TV, at least.
In Australia,
well, yeah.
Yeah, in Australia, well, I guess both in 2000 and 2004, we kind of had a rough go. In 2000, we at least came out with a medal from Curtis Meiden in the 400 IM that year. But overall, our team didn't perform as well as it could have. And then Athens, we definitely had a lot of adversity and hardship. But we've quickly turned that around. We almost had instant success the next year have been building on that.
So you're a medal favorite, hey? You're on a team that's a medal favorite.
Well, yeah, I guess you could say that. Cool.
Yeah,
there.
Definitely cool. That relay.
Who are the big shots in women's swimming? I know Thorpe and I know Phelps. Who are the
Natalie Coughlin's probably the face of swimming. She's from the States.
Okay.
And yeah, she does it all, backstroke, IM.
Have you swam against her before?
Yeah, a couple times.
Cool. Is she a nice girl?
Yeah, she's very nice. Yeah, she actually came, volunteered her time and came out to UBC last summer just to demonstrate her amazing underwater kicks for our kids.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she's awesome.
She had good things to say about her.
Natalie's a great girl. I like her.
Cool, guys. And so, Caitlin, you're trying out for what again? I'm sorry?
200 back.
200 back. And when's your big race to make it?
That'll be, I don't know, next summer.
Next April or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, yeah. Right now, the focus is on Pan Am trials for me.
Wow, so it's just before the Olympics.
Yeah, right before.
A couple of months before, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just that one race, that's it? I find that kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, do or die, essentially.
You'd think they'd make it a compilation or something?
But the thing is, at the Olympics, it's do or die. You know, you swim well and you'll succeed, and so they want to see who can swim under pressure.
But what if you're hurt for that? You're going to be healthy for the Olympics.
True. Yeah, that is one of the sacrifices that they'll never say.
I'm just saying, like, say you pull a hamstring or something, but it's just mild, but you can't swim that day. You don't go to the Olympics?
Yeah,
it's essentially
tough luck on that case. In the past, we've had like pre-qualifications and then second chance meets. This time around, I understand that there's going to be none of that, and it's going to be straight up trials, one chance, and you're done.
That's nuts, eh?
Yeah.
But it is how it is in the Olympics. I guess that's why they do it, or that's how they justify it, at least. I
mean, yeah, essentially, you have all the marbles on the table for the trials and really get to see how you perform at such a high stress situation. And then if you can perform there, then you must be able to perform at the Olympics.
That's an important dive into the pool, then, I think.
A little bit.
And what's the false start situation? You get one free one?
No freebies.
That's stupid, straight up. Well, I used to run track. That's what I ran.
Yeah.
And I can't understand how they give you that one strike, you're out. I find that ridiculous.
Yeah, I know.
You can just have a minor glitch.
Yep, pretty much. Yeah. Although they are pretty lenient on, they're getting more lenient on the false starts or on movement on the blocks, where, like, you can do a little bit of a pump fake, and as long as you're not moving forward while the gun goes off, it's fine. And so you can be kind of rocking back and forth. But, you screw up right there, it's done.
But I should say I ran track in high school, and I never even learned how to use starting blocks. I'm not more
of a mile runner?
No, I was a sprinter.
Okay.
My peak was I won the 100-meter dash in Vancouver in grade 8.
Nice.
That was my peak. I set a school record, and then I think by grade 12 I was in 8th place, and then I tried out. Don't laugh.
Hey, I'm impressed right now.
I went to Western, and I was trying out, and I wasn't good enough anymore.
Aww.
Everybody's bigger than you.
Yeah.
What am I supposed to do? But that was my not so prolific. I had fun doing it.
That's the main thing.
I'll say this, I understand the concept a little of the race itself. It's just you got to be jacked up, but not too jacked up.
Yeah.
Right?
And yeah, exactly.
Focused in kind of a weird kind of a zone. I don't know.
If you will, yeah. For me, it's kind of a like incoherent focus, if you will, where it's like you're not really thinking about what you're doing. You're letting your body do what it can do. So
are there certain things you won't do the day like leading up to it?
There's so many little gimmicks, and you have to be careful what you eat. You have to eat certain things, and you have to. I have to tap my goggles on the blocks before
really?
I go. Yeah.
I want to see you at the Olympics and tapping. That's what I want. What do you do, Brian?
Well, I got my own little routine when I get on the blocks as well.
What do you do?
It's a long one.
Yeah, it's a pretty well-established routine.
Can you get up and do it? And Caitlin,
I don't think it gives us justice for the listeners out there, because it's quite a long routine. But
How long is it?
It's just for the entire walkout. Like for our races, we walk out.
I'm a little crazy. It works.
Exactly.
So.
It gets me focused.
Yeah.
So.
Well, what is it? Don't bring it down.
Well, I always, before I get on, we get marched out. And then once we get to the blocks, I always.
Hold on. I'm sorry for cutting you off. Caitlin merely said she taps her goggles.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit crazier than that, I think. Yeah. So
you walk it. Sorry.
Yeah, you know, I sit on the blocks, which is a little bit different than what everybody does. Usually people sit facing the pool. And so,
or stand.
Yeah, or standing facing the pool. I usually sit on the blocks facing away from the pool to start. And then once my name's announced, then I start getting ready. And once the whistle goes, it's 6 claps, and then I shake. Yeah. Exactly.
They're not angled. Are they straight on clap?
No. I got the one hand in the other hand. So
okay.
I'm a pretty loud clapper, so a lot of people can hear that.
Yeah, you're doing that.
Yeah.
You gotta psych out your
exactly. So they're more focused on me than they are on themselves. So.
Then what happens?
And then I shake out the left arm, right arm, left leg, right leg. Plant my left foot down, and then get my right foot down. And then I'm not really sure what it's called now, but people have called them the power squats, I believe, where I essentially have my hands on my legs and I'm pumping with my arms with a little bit of a pumping motion. I know, it's kind of, yeah. Well, it's more
kind of like that. I don't know. You got your hands on your side and you're gyrating up and down.
If you will. And
so,
then,
there's more?
Oh no, that's it. And then once I'm done that, it's looking down the pool, and then my main focus there is one of the things that I was told as a very young swimmer was that when you're swimming, you're not, if you think of swimming as essentially as a hunt, are you hunting against the competitors, or are you hunting against or what are you doing? And so you're hunting against the wall. Going for the wall. And so that's essentially what I think about the last thing before I get in.
I'm gonna use that.
I needed you guys. I failed my time swim for my bronze cross.
Oh.
I needed you guys. That's brutal, hey? I failed my time swim for my bronze cross.
You're probably wearing those giant shorts over there. Yeah. You need the Speedo.
If you had a fast skin on there, the nice like skin tight Spider-Man suits. You'd be,
how pathetic would I look sucking in that thing? unbelievable. So you understand, if you watch baseball, Nomar Garcia Parra, his whole...
Yeah. Tapping the wrists,
you know,
and stuff like that.
From,
well, yeah. I mean, I actually, I played baseball up until I was grade 11. I had a routine remarkably similar to that, where I was always tapping my feet in the dugout circle. And so, yeah, just like little habits like that that gets your focus off of just like... So inward, if you're too inwardly focused, then you're just going to put too much pressure on yourself. And so establishing those routines kind of relax and just get ready to go.
Yeah, it just makes you feel like you've done this before. You'll do it again. You've won before. You'll win again.
Maybe you got to do more, though.
Yeah, true.
Does like Phelps have a crazy one, or
he actually does? One of the things that he does, it looks very strange on the blocks because he's kind of hyper flexible. What he does is he's in what we call a track start, so the feet positioning are the same as they are in track when you're running.
Yeah, front and back. Yeah.
Yep. And what he does as he's leaned over is he'll swing his arms. And so if you can imagine it, his arms are swinging straight up and down while he's leaning over.
No.
So like you're going like this.
Okay, he's doing it across.
Yeah.
Well, he's like doing like
but
a
he's
breaststroke.
He's swinging his arms behind his back.
Oh, like that. Like right around?
Like swinging it straight across, and like he's so flexible he's clapping right behind
his
back. And so that's always see him do that on the blocks, and he'll usually grab his hands and then do it. And so, yeah.
I can't compete with that. who's the top U.S.? I can't remember her name. I'm sorry. What was her name?
Natalie Coughlin.
The nice girl.
Natalie Coughlin.
What does she do? Anything?
I don't know.
I don't know.
She doesn't stand out as any of these squats or.
Yeah, I know. All these crazy.
With Thorpe and Natter.
Well, Thorpe had he was in his own world whenever he got out. So, I mean, he's something totally different.
What is that?
Well, I mean, he's, it's kind of weird to say this, but he's kind of almost overly intellectual. And so when he walks out to the block, he's just so almost too, it looks like he's too composed when he comes out.
Really? Yeah.
And he's just like so chill and relaxed, and it's like
he should be wearing like a suit and whatever.
Yeah, exactly. He's just like, you know, just getting. I was like, whatever. It's just another race.
And then he jumps in and kicks ass.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Wild. So maybe tapping the goggles is okay.
Yeah, maybe.
Do you tap with both hands or one hand? Or
Both, of course.
Both hands. Yeah.
You got to get both.
Now, my question for you, Brian, was, so in the relay, do you go first or where are you?
For the national team relay?
Yeah.
It varies from meet to meet depending on how we're performing individually and kind of the tactics within the race that we feel is going to be lead us to success. And so
My question is, so if you're going second, third, or fourth,
yep,
are you doing your routine before you get in the pool? And if so, is the race going on behind you? And
yeah, essentially I go through the same routine for the relays, sitting on the blocks and do the claps and everything. Yeah,
so if you have a relay that's too, it can't be too long in a relay though.
Oh no, I have it well established. Yeah. So I mean, I gotta get it ready like halfway through the leg before me so that I can finish it in time by the time I get around.
If you're still doing it after he's tapped the wall.
Hey. Yeah, it would be pretty bad. While he's like touching the wall, it's like, dude, you gotta go, man.
Awesome, guys. I gotta move along here. I got one more guest to get to.
Okay.
Brian, John, thanks so much. Yeah.
Yeah, there's just one thing I wanted to mention before I got out of here. We were talking about the better situation financially for swimming and amateur athletes as a whole. There's one person I wanted to mention, David Sidhu, who is actually a UBC alumnus, played for the football team, and has been very involved in sport at the amateur level. He's involved with the Steve Nash Youth League that just came out, and he has helped me personally along towards my path towards this Olympics. And so I just wanted to give a personal thanks to him. And thanks a lot.
Awesome. Thank you. And Caitlin, best of luck to you.
Oh, thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, guys. Okay, we're going to be right back. We're running a little late here. We're going to be with Dave Chernichan from News 1130 after the break. You're listening to 101.9 FM. Played that song twice today. All right, everybody, welcome back to Winner's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM, CHR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. On the line right now, Dave Chernichan from News 1130, who working in the sports department at that radio station. Dave, is this your hardest working day of the year, NHL trade deadline?
Absolutely. You know, it's not just about, you know, what's going on with your local team. It's about what's going on in the league. It's about staying in touch, on top of everything. And it's a long day. I started at 6 this morning. I left my office at almost 3 this afternoon.
So, and are you trying to break the story before everybody else? And are you hitting the phones constantly, surfing the internet constantly? What are you doing?
Definitely. Just trying to hit the phones, relax, you know, try and track down stuff. I mean, hear things that you're not going to hear. You know, in a day like today, it doesn't really matter because with the internet and the way things are, everybody's going to have a story within a minute or two of each other.
Right. So,
So basically what we do now is, you know, Yeah, it's more the personal bragging that, you know, you don't say anything about, but it's the personal bragging of say, hey, I beat the rights holder, or I beat this longtime journalist, you know, who brags about his connections or something like that, right? That's what it's more about.
Right, cool. So, Dave, let's get into what exactly happened today, and the big trade for me, Todd Bertuzzi goes to the Red Wings, for a first-round draft pick and two prospects. That's what Florida got for him. Your thoughts, Todd Bertuzzi going to Detroit?
As an Oilers fan, I don't even care about that trade.
Oh, man, as an Oilers fan, Dave, I'm sorry. Ryan Smith, out of nowhere, it's announced actually after the deadline, goes to the Islanders. Are these guys good prospects and a first-round pick?
Well, let's get to the Bertuzzi thing first because you wanted to start there. Bertuzzi's the kind of player where, you know what, we know all about him. Okay, the thing is, Bertuzzi's attitude and what he does off the scenes, I don't think is very well known around the NHL. The whining, the sniveling, the me-first type attitude. You know, but on the flip side, he's a playoff performer. And, you know, we could see a repeat of Willie Mitchell, Todd Bertuzzi part two. It's very likely that could happen in the playoffs.
Well, Dave, isn't it too, maybe Detroit, a team like that, is the place for Bertuzzi where he's not the star and they're a veteran team and really he's either just going to have to fit in. I mean, his crap isn't going to fly in that dressing room is really what I'm trying to say. It's a place where he can sort of just be another guy on the team and just buy into the team concept. It seems like a good spot for him.
I think you're half right. I'm not going to agree with everything, Wiener, but I think, you know, that, you know, he's got to remember this is Hockey Town USA. This is like playing in Toronto up here in Canada. Right, that, you know, he's going to the one team, you know, in the States where, you know, maybe with the exception of the New York Rangers, that, you know, he's going to be watched like a hawk, right? I was surprised. I was listening to him on TSN earlier today saying, you know, that him and Florida weren't even close on a deal or an extension. You know, and that kind of shocked me because Florida, I thought, was perfect for Bertuzzi, not because they were a crappy team, you know, but more or less because he loves his anonymity and, you know, he could blend in with regular folk down there.
Is Bertuzzi, I just have tickets to that game. It's St. Patrick's Day. I've got my whole day planned, Dave. I've got my baseball pool in the morning, March 17th. Then I'm going to the bar at about 11 o'clock or noon. And then I'm walking up to the Canucks game at 7. I've got my outfit picked out. I'm ready to go. Is Todd Bertuzzi going to be playing March 17th in Vancouver?
I doubt it.
Yeah, I doubt it too.
Unfortunately for the Canucks.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for the Canucks, you know, it'll depend how his back is doing, but I wouldn't count on it.
Right. And let's keep moving on, though. Ryan Smith going to the Islanders. What the hell happened there? Who are these prospects coming back the way? Edmonton also got a first-round pick. What's going on here?
Well, as an Oilers fan, a lifelong since 79, I am absolutely sick about this trade. You know, I wouldn't say nearly as sick as when either Messier or especially Gretzky were probably number two or three, you know, three for sure. You know, I'm very disappointed in Kevin Lowe. You have an asset like that where every team would give their left testicle, pardon my language, but, you know, their left nut for him. And to screw your team and your fans out of their favorite player, okay, a guy who comes to work every night, a guy who is with you through thick and thin the last 12 years, a guy who took less money in the past, so to help Edmonton out so they could be financially responsible, you know, where's the loyalty?
Right, and Dave, isn't Ryan Smith the classic player under this new salary system where Edmonton should be able to keep him? I mean, you can't blame the league for this one and the crazy spenders. This is an Edmonton Oilers brass decision.
Absolutely, and you know what's even more sickening is knowing that this was a deal made in haste. Okay, and what I mean by that is they were negotiating a contract up until 15, 20 minutes before the deadline. Okay, they were trying to get a new contract signed in Edmonton, and when that fell, Bo panicked and he made a trade. He did the best he could. Okay, but you don't give up a Ryan Smith for two prospects and a first rounder. If you're going to trade him, okay, you trade him for something big. Bo could have cashed in big time with Smith. Instead, he got futures. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, granted, Ryan O'Mara, he's a kid. Okay, he's won two gold medals with Canada, the World Juniors, the last 2 years. He's your prototypical hard-nosed Canadian-style hockey player. You know, he's not going to be a 100-point guy. He's not even going to be an 80-point guy, not even a 70-point guy, I wouldn't say. Okay, but he's going to be a tough power forward. Okay, then you got Robert Nilsson, who is the son of Oilers scout Kent Nilsson. And then you got the first rounder.
Yeah,
I mean, with the Oilers drafting, that should pan out because they've always drafted well. Okay, but I still think it's a horse crap move.
Well, yeah, and you saw what Forsberg went for, and Ryan Smith, you know he's going to be healthy. Forsberg's a gamble. That's less than what Phil. That's less than what Nashville had to give up to get Forsberg.
Yeah, it's absolutely sickening. Now, the only way this turns into gold is if Edmonton is able to re-sign him in the offseason.
Then you're laughing.
Then you're laughing. Then it's screw everybody else.
Yeah.
But apparently, I was watching TV as much as the next person was when I got home from work. And apparently, Smith isn't taking this very well.
Oh, he didn't know this was coming, hey?
No.
Wow.
No, apparently, like, it's near breakdown kind of thing.
Mm.
And to go to Long Island, too, like, have some respect for the player. Have some respect to the player. Granted, I know you want to trade him out of conference because he's a playoff performer. He's the type of guy that could kill you in the playoffs, and he didn't want to do that. But you know what? Excuse me.
Yeah.
The thing is, you know, have some respect for your own player, okay, and at least trade him to a contender or trade him to somebody in the playoff run. It was just a low-class, low-balls move by Kevin Lowe.
Dave, sounds like we're in a situation here in hockey. People have to remember this, is we get mad at players for being disloyal to their teams, but the owners and the teams are even worse to the players as far as loyalty goes.
Yeah, but I think this was more a move out of Kevin Lowe. I don't think you can blame Oilers ownership for this one.
Right.
I mean, don't forget, they got, like, what, 37 owners or something like that.
That's true.
You know, and I don't think you can blame ownership. This one falls 100% on the hands of Kevin Lowe. I think it's sickening. I think it's degrading to all Oilers fans, young and old, to trade a guy who is the heart and soul of the franchise, probably more so than a guy like Mark Messier ever was. Isn't that funny that it happens on the night they honor Messier?
Huh. Dave, we got to move on here. Best of luck getting Ryan Smith back in the offseason, though. But I got to ask you, I give my worst grade of the whole trade season to a guy who I think when it comes down to this time, he might be the worst general manager in hockey. There's nobody worse than this guy. Come trade deadline, he's great at building a team in the regular season, but his teams never do anything in the playoffs, I think, because of what he does at the trade deadline.
Can I guess?
You know who I'm talking about.
Brian Burke.
Yeah, what a dud he was on this deadline. What a dud. He did it again. He did what he always did in Vancouver. He did it to Anaheim. And I don't think he ever had a team in Vancouver as much of a cup contender as this Duck team is. And you're looking at San Jose getting a Bill Guerin, Vancouver adding some people, Calgary adding some people, Nashville getting Peter Forsberg, Detroit adding Todd Bertuzzi. He gets Brad May. Are you kidding me?
Well, that's the second time he's done that at the deadline, where the only deal he's pulled off is Brad May. He did that with the Canucks a few years ago when they reacquired May. And, you know, Brad May, you'll never hear me talk badly about Brad May. He's the kind of guy where he's a great team guy. You know, like, let me tell you, and Wiener, you've been inside the dressing rooms, okay? You know what these players are like. You know how they treat us.
Yeah.
You know, they don't give two craps about us journalists because we're just a waste of time. We're like a person with leprosy begging for money on the street corner. You know?
Yeah.
And that's with all due respect to journalists, you know? And you know how hard it is to form relationships.
Yeah.
You know, when Colorado was in town 2 weeks ago, I'm standing inside the Colorado room with a bunch of other journalists. Brad walks right up to us. You know, says, "Hey, Dave, how you doing? Hey, so and so." You know, like names, handshakes, everything.
So,
right?
Yeah.
And you know what? In today's NHL, that is so rare, and you know, especially what I'm talking about, how rare that is.
Yeah.
You know, and I will never say anything bad about Brad May when he was a Canuck. He gave me some great inside information. Okay, and, you know, good for him to go into a Stanley Cup contender. You know, he's the ultimate teammate. He's going to fight for what he believes in. He's going to fight for what his teammates believe in. You know, but that being said, when you got San Jose bulking up with Guerin, you lose the Bertuzzi sweepstakes to Detroit. You go out and do something.
Nashville got Peter Forsberg. Don't forget that one, too.
Absolutely.
Dallas gets Nagy and Matthias Nordstrom in their deadline. Even Calgary got Brad Stewart and Craig Conroy. Do something.
Absolutely. Absolutely do something, you know? And you know, I understand Berkey's thing. I think if Berkey has one paranoia, he's afraid to mortgage a little bit of the future. Right? Because don't forget, here in Vancouver, his team's never drafted very well. Yes, they had a couple of good picks, okay, in recent years, okay, but they never really drafted very well. And like you said, you know, I'm not going to mortgage the future for a run now. Well, I'm sorry, both Chris Pronger and Scott Niedermayer are going to be 33, 34 respectively this year. Okay, other players are getting older. Timu Solani is going to be 37 this year. When you have a team like Anaheim, you don't wait. You go for it now. And the way Anaheim scouts have done their job and selected picks on draft day, you know, and all you have to do is look at their lineup to see how well they've done, okay, you go for it. If you got to give up that first and second rounder to land Bertuzzi, you go for it. You do what it takes to outbid these teams. But once again, Berkey gets scooped right underneath his nose.
Dave, I think as long as Brian Burke keeps believing that he refuses to overpay for guys, which you have to do at the deadline, I don't think his teams are ever going to be, until he gets over that, his teams aren't ever going to be making long, long runs in the playoffs. He did it here, and he's doing it again this year.
Well, we're going to have to wait and see. Yeah. I mean, you know, at that age, how much gas in the tanks do Scott Niedermayer and Chris Pronger have?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, if one of them goes down in the playoffs, where does that leave you?
Right. And Dave, just running out of time here, but the last question I got here is the Canucks, I like Smolinski, I like Sopel, and they didn't give up much for them, but this is a team third in the Western Conference, and I got to say, you know, you compare it to what Dallas did getting Nordstrom and Nagy, and you've got San Jose getting Bill Guerin, Detroit getting Todd Bertuzzi, Nashville getting Forsberg. Yeah, the Canucks did well, but these other teams did do better. That's what I see it.
Yeah, you know, I think, though, the one thing I like about the moves about the Canucks is they filled two pressing needs. They needed a defenseman. They needed a veteran center. They got it. Okay, Kessler, when he comes back, will add depth as well up front. Now, you know, the one thing that I will say is that I do know the Canucks were working hard to make at least one more deal for the deadline. They wanted so badly to rid themselves of Jan Boulis and Mark Chouinard, but there were absolutely no takers. That's why, I mean, when Chouinard cleared waivers, you know, you quickly got a press release from the Canucks saying he'd been sent down to the minors, you know, and it, they were trying so hard to move Bulis for a gritty forward. They wanted a guy like a Martin Jelena or a Jamal Mayers. You know, that's the type of player they were looking at. Unfortunately, you know, when you want a player, just because you want a player doesn't mean the other team wants what you're willing to offer. And I think that's what happened with the Canucks today.
Awesome. Dave Cherichan from News 1130. Dave, appreciate it as always. You got to be in early tomorrow. Are they giving you a little late start, or what's the story?
I'm taking tomorrow off. heck with all this hockey stuff. I'm tomorrow's my day of mourning.
Tough for there's an Edmonton fan, Luke Mead, our music director here at the station. He was sick too, just so you know that. He was sick.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I know exactly what you're feeling.
Awesome. Dave Cherichan. Dave, thanks a bundle.
Bye.
Okay, that was Dave Cherichan from News 1130. I'd like to thank all my guests today, Randy Knorr and Chris Dick from the UC Thunderbird men's basketball team, Kevin Seibel from the men's hockey team, and the swimmers, Caitlin Meredith, and, of course, Brian Johns. Dave Cherichan was just there. Okay, thanks for listening. I am off next week. At best, we'll be starting our show at 5. Can you start for me early? Can you come in early next week?
Possibly, yeah.
Maybe like 5? 5:30?
I could be 5:30 for sure.
All right, so we're going to have no more than a half hour show next week. I've got an hour down. I've got a half hour more to kill. Anyways, folks, thanks for listening. Have a great day, everybody.
Everybody's building. Others jotting down notes. Everybody's in despair. Every girl and boy. But when we in the Eskimo, why don't you jump for joy? Come on now. Come on within. You'll not see nothing.